Hello? Can you hear me? I'm assuming you can't hear me. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yay. Well, good morning. Thanks for coming to this session. My name is Tarek. I will be your host for the next hour and a little bit. We're going to talk about debugging in Visual Studio. And my goal out of this session is to teach you a few tricks about some of the lesser known features of the debugger. So I'm not going to go like through a basic, like here's how you step, here's how you do that. It's going to actually be a little bit more focused on, you already know how to debug. I just want to give you the little extra edge of here are some things that you make you use Visual Studio a little bit more efficiently. A little bit about myself first before I start. I work with Microsoft in Redmond, and I've been on the Visual Studio team for about 14 years now. I've worked on different parts of Visual Studio. I started working on the IDE and IntelliSense for C# specifically back in 2001 with the original .NET release. And then I did some C++ IntelliSense and did some build system stuff and then runtimes and then compilers and code generation and IDE again and a whole different things. Right now, I'm the group program manager for the team that does all the core components for the Visual Studio IDE for all languages. So whether it's C++, C#, Visual Basic, or JavaScript, that's kind of my team covers all of that. So I hope you have a good session today. Let's get started. So judging by the number of people in the room, I don't really need to give you a lot of motivation on why debugging is important. But before the session, we're looking at some motivational quotes. And this is what we came up with. Basically, you spend half your time writing code and then 3/4 of your time debugging it. I don't know, the math doesn't add up, but it's OK. The idea is, if you were very, very smart writing that code, it's going to be very, very hard for you to debug it. So my goal is to make it easy for you to know how to use the tool so that just based on just your knowledge of debugging itself, your ability to debug, the more you know the tool, the better you are at actually using the tool, the faster you're going to be at finding the bugs. And if your goal is to write quality code and not spend forever doing that, you really need to have a good tool and a good master of that tool so that you are able to get to the quality level that you want faster. So productivity in debugging to me means you have all the strong, productive tools that enable you to zero in on the bug most efficiently and faster, right? So that's kind of going to be the theme of what I discovered, of what I talked to you today. I'll spend almost all the time in Visual Studio. I'll have very few slides. It's just going to be a demo after demo after demo after demo. So if you, if it's hard for you to see from the back, you might want to come to the front. There are a couple of seats still left there. But basically, we're going to spend a lot of time in Visual Studio. I will, however, start with just 3 slides. And those are going to be 3 slides about some of the new things that we did in Visual Studio 2013 that I would like to call out. The rest of the demo is actually mostly applicable to all versions of Visual Studio that we've shipped so far, probably starting 2005, where we had a big revamp of the debugger. But starting 2005, you know, I'm going to be talking about tips from all the way back then. I'm going to have some tips that only work on 2012 and 2013. I will mention those specifically. But expect to get kind of a bag of both. If we have time at the end, only if, we'll have this kind of optional bonus 10 slides that I'll go through. Don't worry if we don't go through them. I designed it to be self-explanatory, so it's okay to, you know, it's good reference for you when you go back to kind of go quickly and look at them. But really the core of the thing is going to be the 60-minute demo that we have. So with that, I'll start with the 3 new things that we did in Visual Studio 2013 that I think are worth calling out. First of all, I just kind of get a quick show of hands. How many people are using Visual Studio 2013 already? Raise your hand if you are. That's most of the room. Okay. Using Visual Studio 2012, I want to say 15-20%. And 2010, somebody just kept their hand up. And I think you're kind of using old versions. 2010 again, sorry. about the same number. 2008, a handful. 2005, nobody. VB6? Okay, a few, all right. Okay, so these are features only available in Visual Studio 2013. Just My Code is something that, who knows about Just My Code? A few. Well, the rest of you who don't know about it probably already use it, actually, even if you're not using Visual Studio 2013. I'll tell you how. Just My Code is basically the ability of the debugger to constrain itself to code that you have written. And anything else, using some heuristic that I can explain to you, actually here on the slide, anything else is considered somebody else's code that you're not interested in debugging into. You don't want to step into it. You don't want to evaluate things from it. You don't want to put breakpoints into it. If you're on a call stack, we kind of hide that goo from you so that you don't see a call stack with 100 things on it. So it kind of makes the debugging experience simpler and easier. This has been available to .NET for a while, and the new thing for Visual Studio 2013 is that we extended this capability to both C++ and JavaScript as well. So how many of you are .NET developers? Again, the majority. JavaScript? Quite a lot, maybe 20%. C++? 5-10%. Okay. Visual Basic? All right, a few also. So all of you .NET developers have had this for a while, and you've been using it even if you didn't know about it. It's just the default. That's how you step. That's how you see code. Now that your C++ and JavaScript friends also get it. The second one is improving the modules window and just having the ability to search in the modules window. This is a window that you probably won't use a lot. It is good if you're trying to debug, you know, simple loading issues or trying to find the symbols for some module and you can't find it, or you have some loading issues for a specific module. And really, frankly, we didn't really create this for you. We created this for ourselves because we are trying to debug Visual Studio and Windows with this tool. And this is what, look at the scroll bar there. These are the number of modules that are loaded when you attach to Visual Studio. So this is actually Visual Studio loaded. So we needed to be able to search in that. So we added the capacity to search. But now you can use it too. The interesting thing here for you is kind of to tie it into Just My Code that I just talked about. If you want to know what is your code versus what is not your code, what the debugger thinks it is or is not, see that user column there? If it says no, it means the debugger is going to skip anything that's inside that. If it says yes, it means we think it's your code. The last one is making .NET Framework source code stepping work. So we shipped .NET Framework source code for a while now. It's a good way of you to kind of go and understand what is happening inside the .NET Framework itself. I don't think this is really useful in terms of debugging actual problems in the .NET Framework. I don't think that's what you're trying to do. But most of the time, it is going to be trying to understand how a specific algorithm works. You know, you're trying to sort and trying to see certain performance characteristics or trying to see how it's implemented. And you can actually use the debugger, which is a very nice way of understanding source code. You can trace through things. Use the debugger to be able to step through the .NET source code. You'll notice that there's actually a link to a blog post down there. It's almost in every slide that I have, including the 10 bonus slides at the end. And those are links to blog posts that talk about this feature specifically and how to make it, you know, how to make the best use of it. All right, so if you're interested in .NET source debugging, you can find the full instructions there. And with that, we'll get all the slides out of the way, and let's go to Visual Studio. See if this is better. Works now. Okay. So here I created a sample application. It is literally a sample application. It does not much that is useful, but it shows some really interesting debugging things while we're doing it. So you're going to discover more about this application as we progress with the demo. But for now, I'll just run it for you just to see what it looks like. Okay? It's one window, three buttons, and a label. It's pretty much what it is. and we're going to explore different parts of the application during the demo. So don't worry about the application itself. Let's actually look at the first part of the debugging demo. The first tip that I have for you is that we all know how to start debugging, right? Just press F5, hit the start button at the top. One nice way that not a lot of people know about to start debugging is that you can start by stepping into the debugger. So you can actually press F10. And with F10, you basically start with the first line of code that you have. Why is this useful? It's useful if you're trying to debug startup code or you want to see exactly what happens when you're starting your application. You could obviously do the same thing if you wanted to do a, you know, go to debug, see where the code is going to start, go put a breakpoint, F9, then F5 to that, then remember to remove that breakpoint, and then go from there, right? But what you can do here is skip those few steps and just press F10 directly. This is going to be a theme in some of the tips that I'm going to give you today, is that there's going to be another way of doing it. It just takes more steps and more clicks and more key presses, and I'm going to try to give you like the one key press to make it work. So for me, when I want to start debugging something in the startup, I just F10 into that. F10 is basically the step over code. You can also do F11, which steps into code, same thing. So for me, let's see what happens here when I go stepping through this. First, I'm going to step. It goes into the initializers, some of the statics or the constants that I have, and you can actually trace through those as well. I have a couple of them. There's the constructor for this, but I don't have the source for it, so I was going to skip over it. And there is the constructor for this. And we go from there, and we go to the functions. So basically, you can keep stepping, and you can debug the whole startup sequence. But that's just to get us started. The interesting stuff is coming next. So now, if you look at this function, what it does basically is that it's going to call a function called demoviz. All right? And this has some interesting things that I want to show you. So if I wanted to evaluate some of the expressions in demoviz and kind of show you how these work, and I want to run all the way to the end of the demoviz function, basically to line, can you see it from here? Line 39, right? If I wanted to run all the way to line 39, how would you do that? Breakpoint? Yeah? You'd set a breakpoint, and you would run to it. Then you'd have to remember to remove that breakpoint after that, right? Another thing that you can do, and we get telemetry about how people use the product when you sign up to the customer experience program. It kind of tells us what you use and what you don't use. It doesn't tell us who you are or anything, but it tells us, like, you know, N% of people use this and 25% of people use that. So we see a lot of people, you know, setting a breakpoint, running, removing the breakpoint. One thing you can do, which kind of makes it a little bit easier, is you right-click and you say, run to cursor, which is also control F10, right? So if you do run to cursor, it's going to put a temporary breakpoint, run, when that temporary breakpoint is hit, remove that breakpoint, and now you're now in code, right? So now we've run all the way through the demoviz function, and I can show you some of the interesting things that this function does. So I've got a few variables in here, which I can visualize. There are lots of strings, okay? So if I look at the first one here, one thing you'll notice is that there is a little magnifying glass here. And the little magnifying glass launches what's called a visualizer. And there are multiple types of visualizers. For me, what's available to this type is any of these four visualizers. Visualizers as text, as XML, as HTML, or finally as JSON, right? So you can already see the string here, but what if it is a very long string or something that you want to see? You could just click on the visualizer, and now it's going to show it in a big window that you could actually see all the details of that string. And I said there are multiple types of this string visualization. So let's say for the XML file, for the XML content, I can look at the visualizer. And now it's actually parsed this XML, and it shows it for me as formatted XML with the tabbing and everything, so you can easily see it. Now it's more human readable. Same thing for HTML. I have an HTML file here. If you look at it, it looks like a string. It's kind of hard to read. But if you open it here, well, I probably did not select the right kind of visualizer. If I do it as HTML, now I can actually see it as an HTML file. You'll notice that the debugger actually remembers the last thing that I selected. So for me, the reason that the XML visualizer came up directly was that, well, I was practicing this demo before I got here, and the XML visualizer shows up because it remembers this thing. When I click the visualizer, I actually selected XML. So the debugger kind of keeps some of my preferences for me. Here, this is debugging HTML. And the latest thing that we added, which is really cool, is visualizing JSON, which if you kind of look at here, it's pretty hard. But if you bring up the JSON visualizer, now you can actually see all the value pairs. And you can even search, look for what you want. See? And it's a pretty cool, nice way to be able to see the values of your types very quickly. One thing that we also show here, so this is not only for strings, right? We can visualize other types here. Let's see, for example, this data set. I can look here, and if you want to see, for example, some of the types, I can look at the tables. Sometimes when you're evaluating something, it has this little refresh button on it. It doesn't actually show the value. You can click on that refresh right here, and that way, you can see the value, right? And the reason it didn't show it up front is that to be able to extract that value, the debugger actually needs to execute a function. So in this case, for example, it's a property. You need to actually go and execute a function to be able to get the value. Functions can have side effects. And having side effects while you're debugging can be dangerous, could alter the state of your program. So you really do not expect that when you're looking at the value of something, something else in your program changes, right? So most of the time, the debugger is able to get the value directly by querying some underlying memory position, and that doesn't change the program. But when we need to do function evaluation, or what we call funky eval for short, if you need to do any funky evals, that's when we give you the option of, you know, I invoke it myself. It doesn't happen by default. For this case, I know there are a few side effects of this that I actually worry about. So I can evaluate and I can show this. One thing that is really cool is that sometimes when I'm showing, you know, when I kind of debugged halfway through the world and I can have this really big data tip that is filling my whole view, I just want to see something in the code behind it, right? And I don't know how to do that, you know, short of dismissing the data tip, looking at the code, and then trying to hunt, you know, seven ways down again to be able to find it. One very quick way of doing that is actually pressing the control key. So while I have the data tip here, I can press control. It shows the editor. I can remove it. Data tip comes back exactly where it is. And can I keep doing that, see, forever. So that's another tip, which is the stress relief tip. When you're tired, you can just kind of keep doing that for a little bit. It's better than a squeezy ball. And it works for me. So some of the tips are going to be productivity. Some of them are going to be just having fun. I really like control because sometimes things block my way. This also, by the way, works for IntelliSense. It works for the little margins if you're dragging and dropping windows. It works for a bunch of things. If you're something in general is hiding your view in the IDE, try pressing control and see if that takes it away. One really cool thing that we have in the debugger is, look at here, if I go refresh this again, let's say I actually was interested in this author's value, okay? And I want to see it. I can obviously add a watch to it and keep it in my view, but that requires me to have the watch window up all the time to be able to see it. One feature that we added to the debugger that I really like is the ability to pin those. So see this pin, little pin icon next to any of the data tips that you have? If you click on it, notice what happens on line 29, right next to the number 29. See that blue pin that comes in and out? That means we've dropped a pin somewhere there for that value. So if I actually dismiss the tooltip or actually show control, see that pin that shows up there with the value? That's because I pinned it there. So now, if I'm here while debugging, see, I can actually have this data tip be visible all the time, even if I had my editor window maximized. I could move it, put it in a different part of the code, basically anywhere that I wanted. I could just move the tip and see the value. I can also add comments to these tips, right? So if I wanted to put something about why I'm watching this variable or what I'm waiting to see, if I have many of those, I can kind of put comments here. So this is a comment. I can even go to the debug menu and export data tips. So if I want to hand off a debugging session to somebody, I can put a bunch of watches somewhere, put a lot of data tips, put comments on them, and then export the data tips, and then give it to that person and have him start debugging from there. I could do it for myself. If I want to stop here and kind of do something else, I want to come back to it, I can save that context with all the data tips and all the comments, and then you're going to see import data tip. I can import it later and continue doing that, continue debugging from where I left off. With data sets, I talked about visualizers. Data sets also have visualizers. So I can click on that. And I can see the data set in kind of more details. We took the liberty out of creating data, visualizers for some of the common types that we think people use. But in addition to that, we provide a way for people to create their own visualizers too for the debugger. So let's say, as I'm stepping here, I can see the value of authors. Actually, if I stop debugging, that data tip is still there. And if I look at it, it will give me the last value that it had in the debugger. So even when I stop debugging, those data tips become more valuable than the watch window because you can still kind of refer to it and see, okay, what was that variable when I looked at it? And you should be able to see that. Another really cool feature that I bet very few people know about is you're able to see data tips from comments. So you can, obviously you can, I'm sorry, let's go back. Obviously you can highlight, look at any variable, hover over it, and see its value, right, when you're debugging. Let's go here again. I'll do Control F10 and go to this place again. I can hover over any variable and see its value, right? But I can also hover over anything in the comments and see its value, right? So it doesn't actually have to be in your code. You could put comments throughout your code for things that you think that you want to look at, and then very easily just click on those and be able to see the values. Not only that, you could even do it on the fly. So let's say here in this last expression that I have here, and I want to do I plus J, right? I can highlight that, and I can hover over it, and it would actually compute it. So you can do expressions, you can kind of add them in the comments. It's a very fast, quick, and dirty way of getting evaluations, just getting be able to see values in the debugger. I actually really like this feature, and I think how many knew about this already? And I was very surprised when one of our team members was telling me about it. It's very interesting. All right. I talked about visualizers. And visualizers are basically created by creating your own DLLs that, have some code that runs that say, associated with this type, this is the kind of visualization that I want. So if you are a library author, it's definitely a valuable thing as you're giving a library to somebody. How many here create libraries for other people to use? Well, that's a good number, about 15-20%. Please, it's a good thing to create visualizers for others to use. And now you can just package these visualizers with your library. So people, when they're debugging through your code, as they're seeing the funny data type 2, and they hover over that, they can actually get a good visualizer and they can actually see what's in that as opposed to see how it's implemented, right? It's actually a very useful feature. You can read more on that on the MSDN documentation. Just search for custom visualizers in Visual Studio, and you're going to see a lot of tips on how to do that. All right. So I've designed this demo to kind of have a little intermissions in the middle. It gives me a chance to get a sip of water, but also give me a chance to see if anybody has any questions. And for me, please feel free to interrupt along the way. You know, you don't have to wait until the end of the presentation to ask questions. If you have any questions during the talk, feel free to kind of raise your hand. If I can't see it, wave, and then I'll stop and I'll answer the question for you. All right, so we covered debugging, starting with stepping. We covered the visualizers that we have. We've covered the data tips and how to use them effectively, all the pinning and the comments. We've covered FunkyVal, covered a few things. So what's next for us? Let's go back to Visual Studio and see. OK. I'm going to get to run the application again. And if you look at this application, how I've designed it, I have, well, I'll go first and dismiss this data tip. I don't need it anymore. I can click on this label, the spot label here. And if I click on it, it will change the title of the window. Okay? You'll notice that the title of window is now ABDC. And I think that's a bug. I expect it to be ABCD. So let's see what is happening. Okay? So how do you do that? What's the best way to do that? To find why why when you click something it doesn't work? You're going to go to the event handler and place a breakpoint, right? Let's do that. So I will go to the event handler. In this case, I know this thing is called a grid. So I'm going to search for grid. Grid mouse up. I like that. By the way, this is my all-time favorite thing in Visual Studio. It has nothing to do with debugging, but it's the fastest way of moving around code ever. You hit control comma, and you type whatever it is that you want, whether it's a symbol or a file name or anything. You hit enter, and it gets it for you. Type part of it, type all of it. You get auto-completion. You get IntelliSense. And then you just hit enter, and you're there. So I'm going to place a breakpoint here and then start debugging. I could also use the tip that I gave you before, which is instead of set the breakpoint, run to here, remove the breakpoint, I will just run to cursor. In my case, I'll just use Control F10 because that's just faster. So now I'm going to say run to cursor. And I hit the spot. I probably stopped debugging it, sorry. There we go. I'll start here and I'll say run to cursor. Control F10. And I'm going to hit this again. And now we are stopped at where we want. Now, this is a trick question. The way I set the title is that I'm just gratuitously calling a number of functions on the same line. It's actually kind of a typical pattern. There are lots of places where you'd have one line where you're calling a lot of different functions, some of them getting results from each other. This kind of nesting is common. Who knows which function is going to be stepped in first? I heard like. Okay. Who thinks it's one of the others, code, writes, or who? Or title? Raise your hand if you do. Sir, you're wrong. So it is like. Thanks for playing. It is like. Actually, it is not like, but only because I tricked you. You would think it is like, and you would be right to guess that it is like. It's just that if we step through this, it won't go into like, just because I designed it to trick you. So let's see, but for a good reason, and I'll show you why. So I step into, and what I get is this get A. Not like. And you're like, how did I get here? What is this? So you look at the call stack, which is your friend in terms of telling you how you got here. That's really the main thing that the call stack window answers is, how did I ever get here? So I'm going to expand the call stack window a little bit and see. OK, get A comes from some external code, which comes from the mouse up event that I'm in. So there's some external code that got in the middle. What's that external code? How do I find out? Easy. Right click. Show external code. And there you're going to see that like is there, right? And somehow it's tagged as external code. By the way, this external code thing, this is the Just My Code feature I was talking to you about. This is right here in play. And that's the reason why you don't see all the presentation core.dll, system, mouse button, whatever, all of that stuff that you really don't want to see while you're debugging, right? But in this case, like was also there. Let's see why it's marked that way. Because this sure is my code, and I can even go to its definition here. So I'm going to turn this off, because it's really annoying to work with all the external code. But if I go to the implementation of the like function, you're going to see that it has this attribute up here, which is debugger non-user code. So that's how I tricked you. So I inserted this there specifically. And the reason I inserted this there is that there are some places in your code when you're like, you know what? I'm never going to want to trace into this. It's so trivial, so easy. Like, I never even have any problems here. I could just effectively mark it as, debugger, please don't bother with this one at all. And then anybody debugging into this one will just magically step over it all the time. So if you have pieces of code that you just want to not debug into, that's one way to do it. Just put an attribute on top of that function that says debugger non-user code, and you're all set. You might think, for example, hey, this is a good thing to do for trivial properties, right? Like if you have a property with a getter and a setter, and I don't want to step through the getter and a setter, and you could just do that for all your properties, except that we do that for you by default. So if you right-click here, and there's an option to step over properties and operators, that by default is checked. You can uncheck it if you actually really want to go through the properties and operators, but most people don't. We find very few people check this thing. Okay, so now I'm able to do that. Let's go back, okay, step through the rest. Okay, step through here, and I'll do F11, I'll go now, it goes into codes, I'll step again, it goes into writes, and now you can see that it has D as opposed to C. Now, if you look at the call stack here, it says, it was first called with AB, and now this one is putting D on it as opposed to C. Actually, you'll notice, actually, I have the stack. I have the values in the stack. And my guess is that who has their machine set up to actually have the values in the stack? Who already sees this? One other person. Okay, you have a match. Most people, you know, use the default thing, which is show the type and show the name of the variable. I find these two to be the, kind of the least useful things. I don't know why that's the default. I pretty much know it when I'm debugging what the function takes. What I'm really interested in is the values. The reason it's not a default, actually, is that it takes a little bit of extra debugger time to do that, and we didn't want to slow down the debugger, but it really is not noticeable at all for me in any case. So I just set it to do this. How do you set it to do this? You go in the call stack window, you right-click, and there's going to see, you know, you can show the module name. Typically, these two are selected, types and names, and this normally is unselected, but I actually make the show parameter values selected all the time. And that way, I can actually see the parameters as we're going. And when we have a long call stack, it's very helpful to be able to see what the value of all the parameters were. All right, so I'm going to step out of this, step out, and now we're done with this part. Okay, let's say, so that was one way of doing it, is kind of just step through each function and find the culprit. What if you knew, like now I actually know that writes was the problem. What if I had a hunch that that's the one that I wanted to go into? Or in your case, it would be, there's a specific function on that line that you're interested in stepping in, but really to be able to do it, you have to step through three others before it, right? How do you get to step directly into that function? I'll show you that. So first, I want to re-execute this again. One way to re-execute it is I'll stop debugging, I'll start debugging again, and we can do it, right? Well, another way to do it is to move backwards. So I can go here, and I can say set next statement, Control-Shift-F10. And what this does is it starts executing from that place. Now, you will notice that this actually did not actually go backwards. I was kind of misleading in saying that. It doesn't trace back. What it does is it just tells the debugger, next time you execute an instruction, don't do the ones for this line, do the ones for that line. Nothing magic there, except that your code is going to execute again, which is what you want. Now, obviously, this has potentially side effects. Like if you already ran things that change the state of your program, and you start debugging the same things again, the state has already changed, so it doesn't do any magic like rolling back the state of the program. But in my case, has there been any side effect to this? Anybody knows any side effect to this function? There is one. Title has changed, right? That is a side effect. But in my case, I am okay with dealing with that side effect. I don't think it bothers my debugging at all. In fact, it allows me to do things like, you know, I can go over this. Oh, by the way, did you know you could change the values in these things? So I can go here, instead of A, B, C, D, I can try to see what it would be if it was empty first. So if you want to debug something with different values than what you already have, you can go edit this and modify. So in my case, I'm fine with the side effect. I will start debugging again. So let's step and see what happens. So now let's say I actually directly want to go into writes, as opposed to step through, get A, code, and then writes. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to right click, and you'll find step into specific. You see it from back there? And this lists all the functions that we recognized on that line. And it allows you to pick a specific one and go directly to it. So in my case, I want to go to writes, so I'm going to step into specific writes. And that skips over everything and takes me directly where I want, which is exactly what I need most of the time. I'm very rarely interested in stepping through three other functions before getting what I want, and most normally know what I want to get into. So now I can go through this, and now we're done. What's another way of doing this? Okay. One new feature that we added to the debugger that I think is really cool is the ability to see return values. So often enough, you kind of call a function, you wanted to step into it, and you forgot, stepped over it. And then all you really were interested in is the result of what comes out of it, and you just wanted to step into it to see what was going to return. The debugger now saves that for you and shows it. So if I go back, I'm going to go set the next statement here again. And one fast way of doing it, by the way, is just dragging and dropping, right? You can drag and drop this arrow right there, and that just moves your debug context to the beginning again. And I'm going to step. And notice what happens when I step. I should show the autos window. And I go back there. And step. There you go. See, these are return values right here. And I'm just not expanding it, so I can't really see it. But now I can see that like returned A, code returned AB, writes returned ABD, and who returned ABDC. So I can very quickly see, oh, the culprit was writes. It's the one that added the wrong letter in the mix, right? So that's one way of doing it. Actually, it doesn't only work for code that you write. So in this case, you know, I wrote all these functions so I can see them. It also works if you're calling into a .NET framework function. So for example, let's go back and step into any of these functions. I'm going to step again. And I'm going to step into specific. And let's go into another one this time. And step into code. Okay. F10. Notice the autos window. When you do a plus to a string, what it really does under the covers is call string.concat, right? And it really tells you the result of the string.concat event, right? So it's a very nice and handy way of kind of getting really quick values out of the debugger. If you have the autos window open, it shows you that. All right. So let's stop debugging here and go back to my deck. So I showed you some of the neat features in the call stack. We talked a little bit about how to hide things from the debugger, how to move around code, how to set next statements, and finally, how to pinpoint and specifically step into different areas of the debugger. Let's go to the third part of our core demo. And this is all parts of our first demo. I'm just trying to take a breath in the middle, right? So we're going to continue doing more of these things, and it hopefully continues to get more interesting as we go. All right, let's go back to Visual Studio. So Everybody knows that you can start debugging by F5. Now you know that you can start debugging by F10 or F11 as well. Who knows that you can actually start debugging from the immediate window? Okay, a few people. Well, this is really a good crowd to have for this session. So sometimes I want to create just a little test function, right? And to be able to execute that test function, I have to go either like modify my project and have a place somewhere randomly where it calls my test function, or go create a whole new project for it and be able to call it that way. And I don't really like to go create new projects just to be able to test something that then I eventually copy and put in my code. So what I do is I just put it in my code directly. Instead of going to a random place like in my main window constructor and calling my test function, I could just put it in my code and start executing directly into it and skip running the whole program. So let's say here in my case, I wanted to instantiate an instance of my class. So I'm going to say var, this is the immediate window, and I can just type stuff into it. So I say var o equals new my class. So here it goes, creates a new object for me, and it gives me some data about what it initialized it with. Okay? So now I have this temporary transient running thing that I can work with. One of the things on my class, one of the methods on my class is called reverse string. So I want to show you how to reverse that string. Let's see where the reverse string is. Control comma, reverse string. There you go. Here's the reverse string function. It's a very simple function. And you give it anything and it's just going to reverse it. So in my case, I'm going to call that function with o.reverseString. And I'm going to put something pithy like rats live on no evil star. All right? And it can execute that. And as I execute a function, what happens is it actually starts the debugger and goes and hits my first breakpoint. And by the way, this you can, you know, if you want to put a hard breakpoint in code every time you reach a certain line for some reason, you could do it by putting debugger.break. It's the same thing as putting a breakpoint on that line. And this will just break the debugger always. And if you're not running under the debugger, you're going to get an exception. So you don't do that. So in my case here, I've designed it such that it breaks here at the end of this function. And now I can actually go and visualize kind of what happens inside this function without. So now I'm testing reverse string without actually having to call reverse string anywhere in my application, right? Without having to modify my application. So in my case, I wanted to see how it worked on reversing my string. Okay, so I can put a breakpoint right here. And now I'm going to show you one of the coolest features that I think we have in the debugger, which is sometimes I don't want to stop at every hit of that breakpoint. What I really want to do is I want it to stop, see a certain value, continue, stop again, see a certain value. Let's say you have a loop or you have something that goes in an iteration, and you just want to see the value at different values of the iteration. And normally I do that by putting a breakpoint and then hitting it multiple times, seeing what the values were. But what you can do is actually tell the debugger not to stop here. It's just a, hey, debugger, please breakpoint, but don't break. What you're going to do instead is something else. Well, what is that something else? You get this by right-clicking. So I just created a normal breakpoint. I hit F9. And I'm going to right-click on the breakpoint and say, when hit. And when hit, you can do some cool thing like print a message, where you're going to say something like, you know, anything that you want to say, the value is, and then between these curly braces, you can put any variable that you want, okay? And notice here that it says continue execution. You can choose to print something and not continue execution if you wanted, but in my case, I'm going to continue execution. So now, every time I go through this loop, I'm going to print the value of RevString without stopping the debugger. And I'm stopping after the loop, and I'm just going to look at all the values after it's done. Okay? So I'm going to put this trace point here, hit OK. And as I do that, you'll see that it changed from a circle to this nice diamond here. That's your cue to it's a trace point now, not a breakpoint. So obviously, I am behind that point, so I can either rewind back and execute, or I could just do the reverse string again. Okay? Well, obviously. Let me stop that. And let's get the immediate window again. And we're going to run it, okay? So let's do a new variable. And let's reverse the strike. Okay? I probably did something wrong. I can't hear you. One line down, you're right. This is great. I have it on the wrong line. So here, well, this is actually a time to show you another tip. So you put the debugger on the wrong line, you put a debugger breakpoint on the wrong line and you want to move it. What's the fastest way to move it? You can right-click, location, and you'll notice it's line 84. Just go here, and you do line 85, enter. Now it's moved, and now we can actually get it working. I was wondering why it was not working. Thank you for finding that. You have some sharp eyes. I'm sorry?
Are there any tools in the Visual Studio that have to debug the
debugging? Are there any Visual tools in Visual Studio to debug the debugger? We use them all the time, actually. We're debugging the debugger half the time. Yes, it's a bit more complicated. So let me stop that. And let's start it again and see it in action. Let's create the variable and reverse the string. And now, something funny is happening. Try it again. I'll try to hit it from here this time. I don't know why it's not going for me. Well, something is happening with it and it's not working. I'm not going to spend a lot of time debugging it here, but what it was supposed to show you is actually the rev string and going, seeing the value of rev string changing. Press F5 again, I think. Yeah, it's not what it is. Don't know. It's all right. Don't worry about it. Take my word for it. The output window. Of course. Thank you very much. There's somebody who knows it. So let's clear that. And let's do this again. Thank you very much. Things work differently when you're up here. So now, I'm going to reverse the string, and when you have five, you're going to look, and now it shows it in the immediate window. There you go. Why not? I don't know what happened. Somebody needs to debug this debugger. But thanks for letting me look somewhere else, and now it worked where I was expecting it, but that works. So it works, and basically rev string shows you exactly where it was. So that's the cool thing about the debugging session, is that you get to see bugs in the debugger. All right. So we showed you how to do trace points and how to move your breakpoints. Let's go back to our deck, and I'll take you to the last part of my first demo. I showed you how to debug from the immediate window. I showed you how to do trace points, which is by far my favorite thing that a debugger can do. I'm glad you got to see it to work. I actually didn't show you the hit count breakpoints. We'll do that in the next demo. All right. Let's go back to Visual Studio and do a couple more things. So I'm going to run this application again. And I'm going to hit the rev button. I'll actually remember to remove this breakpoint now. I don't need it anymore. And I don't need the immediate window. All right. And I'm going to go here. OK? So now, what I have is, again, the same reverse string function. If I look at the call stack, I can see that it's recursion with a lot of things happening right here. Okay? So one way to see this, one of the reasons I want and I like to have the values here is that I can quickly compare the parameters across all the different calls of that function quickly by looking at the call stack. But you know, the parameters are not everything that I'm interested in. There are more values here. There's first, there's last, there's revster itself, there's an str. There are a number of variables that I'm interested in. I could be wanting to compare all of them directly. And the way to see it would be kind of go and click on the call stack. You know, you can do that, right? Double click on the call stack window. And there, you can see the values at the different frames, what we call the stack frames, right? But the problem is, you know, it really is a lot of clicking to be able to see all of these things. What if there was a nice way to do the same thing like I see here with the values D, ED, space ED, just for the parameter, but do it for any other variable that is in context or in scope? There is actually a way to do that, and it's with a new feature that we introduced that's called the parallel watch window. So I can get debug, windows, and there I can go to parallel watch. We have four of those. We'll get one of them. And what parallel watch is, it kind of visualizes all the threads that you have, or in my case, all the recursions. You know, it also does that. It's useful for recursions as well. And now your watch window, instead of adding watches vertically, you can add them horizontally. And why is that useful? Now, because you can compare them, you know, it provides multiple values for each one of these. So for example, let's say I wanted to see the value of str, I wanted to see the value of first, I wanted to see the value of, you know, last, make that bigger, last, right? Now, with just one view, I can visualize across my whole call stack, all the recursion on my whole call stack, I can see the values of specific variables when you moved across the stack frame. So instead of going one by one, I could just have in one view all of the different values. I can compare them and see, like, okay, this is the one I'm interested in, so it's that part of the call stack. I can go there, and now it takes me to the call stack that I want. All right? It's a very handy little feature. It's a little known about feature. Another thing, let's say I was going to go all the way down here. That is where I called the reverse string function originally. Okay? Let's say I'm in the middle of execution. Now I know that I'm inside that function somewhere. I want to go back here, right? How do I go back here? If I set a breakpoint on line 74 and continue execution, do you think it's going to hit that breakpoint? Who says yes? And now you're just all afraid of raising your hands. Who says no? Only a few people. Okay. If you said no, you were right. It's not going to hit that function. The reason it's not going to hit that line. The reason it's not going to hit that line is that when you hit a breakpoint, when you set a breakpoint, what the debugger does is it puts a break at the first instruction for executing that line. So now you're already like kind of halfway in the instructions of executing that line. You've already called somewhere else. The breakpoint that we put is never going to get hit, because when you come back, you're never coming back to that first instruction. You're coming back somewhere in the middle. So what you really want is to put the breakpoint on the last instruction for that, or like after the last instruction. How do you do that? Well, obviously, one thing you could have done is go to the next line and either run to cursor or hit a breakpoint. But that would be too easy. There are times where you actually need to go, and you just can't put the breakpoint on the next line. You actually want to kind of put a trap and see when it exits here. So the way that you do that, and this is also another little known fact, if you set the breakpoint from the call stack window, it will put it on the last, after the line executes, not before. So if I go here and say, on Revit, I am going to, you know, you can do breakpoint, you can do insert breakpoint, right? If I do insert breakpoint on the call stack, it will put the breakpoint at the end of that line. I could also use my favorite feature, which is run to cursor. Instead of putting breakpoint and then forgetting to remove it after that, I could just do run to cursor. Run to cursor, normally what it does is it would put it at the top, you know, first thing in that line. When you do it from the call stack window, it does it at the end as well. So I'm just going to run to cursor. And what it's going to do is it's going to finish executing that function and come back to where I wanted it, not start executing the next line. And that's sometimes what you want to do. All right. You will notice here this one, I'm in the middle of an async function. I'm going to go to a different tip now. This is in the middle of an async function. And how many of you use async and await? A good number, okay? So you find this handy. And how many of you, keep your hands up if you raise it already, if you're using async and await. How many of you are using Visual Studio 2012, not 2013? A handful. Okay, you're going to want to upgrade just for this one. So what happens here is that normally with Visual Studio 2012, what you would get is the call stack saying, I'm in Revit, and then there's a lot of external code before that. And we don't know who called you. We don't know what happened. And the call stack can't answer the basic question that it was invented for, which is, how on earth did I get here? But now, with Visual Studio 2013, we add this feature that does kind of a fake call stack, a logical call stack of, hey, we're resuming an async method. So you see that second line there in the call stack that says, this is actually an async method. And at the bottom of the call stack, it says there was an async call, and this is where the async call came from. So now we go and kind of go to a different thread, figure out what that was. This is the one that called you, and this is the top call stack for that thread. So now you know that Revit was called from my RevClick event handler, which is a really nifty feature if you're doing async debugging, because now you could actually see a lot more detail about why you got here. Another thing that I want to show you is, let's say, kind of we go outside all the way here, okay? If I go, see here, this, right? This is a main window, right? Because right now, this points to something of type main window type, right? If I move here, this is a my class. It's kind of a different type. It has a different value. If I put this in the watch window, which you know you can right-click and add watch right from here, if I put this in the watch window and I expand it, and I switch stack frames, this is very contextual based on where I am, which is what you want. Like, you want your watch to be contextual based on where you are. But what if you were interested in the other this, and you really want to see it all the time? How do you make it not contextual so you can actually see it? How do you see both, right? One way to do that is one of the .NET features called Make Object ID. How many have used Make Object ID before? A few. That's good. For the rest of you, here's how you do it. Right-click, and you say, make object ID. What it's going to do is, you see that £1 there? It basically created a hash for this object and says, like, you know, this is my first tracked object. So now, if I go inside this and say, I want to get answer, right? And I add a watch to that, right? Let's say, sorry. Ah. If I go and go to this other one and I make object ID as well, you'll see it has become 2. Okay? So I can do one hash here, and I can do two hash here. And now, as I go between the two stack frames, this always changes, right? One time is tracking one time is tracking two. But one hash and two hash are always tracking what I want them to track, right? So that's one quick way of just being able to basically pin a certain, you know, view of a specific variable on the watch window and get it regardless of which stack frame you're in. Now, another thing I want to show you is, let's say, you know, I'm expanding this, and here, this one is a my class, and for my class, I can see that the answer is 42, and two, I can expand that, and I can see a lot of things. You know, if I go inside base here, I can see that it actually has a title. Where's the title? And I can see the name of the title. But that's a lot of hunting down to see the values that I actually want. what if I wanted it such that every time I step and I see something of my class type, I always see answer? And if I want to see main window, I always see title. How do I make that happen? There's a very nice feature in the debugger that makes that possible. So let's do this. If I go here, and I'm going to go to the my class first. One way to make that happen is if any type has a toString, one quick way to uncomment is control KU. So I can uncomment the toString here. If any type has a toString, what it will do is it will use the value from toString to kind of show the quick value in the debugger. So that's one way of doing it. For the other type, I'm going to do it a different way. So I go to the top here. On my class, there's something called the debugger display attribute. And if I put the debugger display attribute on something, then it's going to use whatever string is used in that debugger display as what to show in the debugger window. Okay? Which is actually a very nice way to just go kind of go annotate your code with these things. So let's start debugging again. And see whether the values are any cleaner. So now we're in rev. We're going to go here. We're going to get all the way out. Right? And between these two, now I see that this, the answer is 42. It visualizes it correctly. If I go here, it says the title that I have. Notice also that the one hash and two hash are gone between debugging sessions. That's something that only stays within one debugging session. If you want to have it in another debugging session, you have to go make object ID again. Okay? All right. One way of adding these debugger display types is instead of just going around your code and adding them, or sometimes you don't actually own the code, specifically if you don't own the code, or it's coming from somewhere else, or it's code that you can change, one thing that you can do is go to the file called autoexp.cs, which is somewhere in your user folder under Visual Studio 2013 Visualizers, and there you have the ability of adding all the debugger display attributes that you want for any type. You can specify the type there, you specify the string, and the assembly if you want it for a specific assembly, and that's how you can do it. And you'll see these are all examples for what we do at Microsoft for all the BCL types for .NET. You can kind of do the same, you can go edit this file and add your own types. All right. Last thing I want to show you here real quick is a different feature of the debugger, which I also really like. So now, I'm going to run the app. I'm going to hit the spot button. And right here, you will notice that I have the output window. I'm just have another function supposed to display either cool or wrong. In my case, it displays wrong. I want it to display cool. What is happening? How can I know what is happening? Okay. So what I'll do is I'll go evaluate. Here's where it decides. These are the different expressions it evaluates. Guess has this value. Total MS that it's comparing to has a different value. Where did it get that from? From here. If I expand it and look, I'll see that, oh, I want total milliseconds instead of milliseconds, which is what I have here, see? So what I can do is do this as total milliseconds, right? And instead of having, I've kind of made changes to the code now. Instead of having to stop and restart, I could continue execution. Obviously, I have to go back here to that line now. I can continue execution, okay? Oh, I have changed the other ones too. And oh, edit, stop. Try this again. I changed something in the middle. I'm sorry. And now I'm going to stop at the same place again. And now, if I go back here, and I change this to total milliseconds, I can continue execution without having to recompile my application, which is a feature that we call edit and continue. For some reason, also it's not working for me here, and I think it's probably because I have these on. I'm sorry? Oh, maybe I called the wrong one, you think? I don't think so. Here you go. Total milliseconds. Did I misspell it? No. Oh, can't even evaluate it. Okay. So if I continue going there, it should be able to continue executing on it, okay? And what happens is, now if I look at the values, they're the same, and I can step, I still get wrong, it's probably because of some other condition, it's this one. So I can also go and change this one. One thing I like to do is just peak definition instead of go to definition and change the editor value. And in there, I can go and change this to true to make it work, right? Here, you'll see that I get actually a purple line, and this is the one where it says updating this, because I cannot update field initializers on the fly and then continue execution. So while I could do something small like changing the value that is used somewhere, I cannot go and change make a more drastic change like this one. So for some of those features, edit and continue is not going to work. So for that case, I need to stop debugging and start it again to be able to get to that space. One tip, by the way, if you want to ever stop debugging and restart it again, a faster restart is just hitting that refresh button for debugging instead of starting and stopping again. And if you hit the refresh button this way, it actually kind of, instead of loading the debugger, unloading the debugger, loading it again, it keeps the debugger loaded and just swaps up your image, which is a faster way of reloading the debugger. All right. So let's say I also wanted to know where guess was changed, right? How do I find the value of where guess gets changed? One way of doing that is going to the definition here. And I'll see that it's a property. And let's say I actually wanted to break in the setter or the getter. Now, to be able to see where guess has changed, I can go at the setter itself and find that out. So what I would do is I would right-click and add a breakpoint, but I can't because these are actually not functions that I can add. So how do I add the breakpoint to a function that I don't have the source for? One way of doing that is going to the breakpoint window. Now debug, Windows, breakpoints, and just add a new breakpoint. And I can say break at function. So now, if I put that function name, and say in my class here, my class dot set underscore guess, which is actually where what that function is actually called, the implicit setter that is created, and I hit enter, IntelliSense is going to tell me I don't know what this is, and we're going to tell it I've done this before, so I know it. Now, if I run my app, you will notice that it stops at the place where guess was modified. Right, so now I set a breakpoint at a function that I actually didn't know, like I had no idea where guess was going to be initialized. And since the getter is not in my code, if I look at the call stack, I see there's external code up top, but it tells me where in my code it actually did that. Okay. So now I'll take you to my last demo, which is multi-threaded debugging. How many of you do multi-threaded debugging? Okay, a good portion, or close to half, all right? So this is going to be an interesting one, and it's going to be a quick one too. So here I have Visual Studio, and I'm going to start debugging. Oh, see those things that I said about breakpoints? You forget to remove them. Oh, thank you. I'm going to start running the application, and I'm going to hit the PAR button this time for the parallel demo. And for parallel debugging, there are a couple of extra windows that I like to use. So I use the, one of the modes for the IDE is the full screen mode. And if I switch to full screen mode, I've customized it such that it shows these two windows. In my case, it's going to show the parallel stacks and the parallel watch window. All right? So I can remove the previous watches that I had here. Right? So what this does is it visualizes the threads that are running, and it groups them by which context they're in, which call stack they're in. So if you look at the function here, it tries to calculate prime numbers, and it does that using link, and it does another version of it using parallel link. Right? If I look at the values here, and I expand Q that actually run, I see that I actually have a little bug in how I calculate it. So if I look at the results, I'll see that these are all prime numbers, except that there are some that are not, like 9, 15, 25. These are all not prime numbers. So what happened, and how can I find this bug? So it all happens in the is prime. So I'm going to put a breakpoint here. But now I don't want it to break everywhere. I just want it to break when p equals 25, right? So easy way to do that. You do an advanced breakpoint, which is also a right click, and then you say, sorry, click the wrong one. And you say condition, and there you say p equals 25. And that will make it only stop when p is equal to 25. So let's run it and see what happens there. Okay. When I run, you'll see that, you know, now it's stopped, and I see that I already have a total of 5 threads. One of them is stopped at, you know, had the my window parallel click, and then it called into part, and it's somewhere in external code. 3 threads have stopped at prime, and 1 plus 3 is 4, so there's one more thread that's probably doing somewhere else, kind of hasn't started yet or still being constructed. All right? So for those 3 threads, I can go and use the parallel watch that I've showed before to see the values of p. One is doing 24, one is doing 25, one is doing 27. And I can use this to handle the different threads that I have. So let's say, for example, I wanted to move these 2 all the way to the bottom of the function while leaving the 25 one for me to evaluate. So I can go right here, right click, select these 2, flag them, and then I can say, run to cursor, but this time only run the flag threads to cursor. Okay? So it's going to keep everything else the same, run these 2 threads to the cursor, right? Well, I kind of did it for the wrong one, but it's okay. Now if I go to 28 right here, and I can do that, I can see where it is, and oh, I did not show one of the interesting ones. Let's do this again. This one shows you all the threads in the source, like in the source code, see where all the threads are stopped. So I will do this again and show you, because I missed showing you all the different threads in the source. So let's parallel again, and we're going to do the same, F5. And now I have P equals 24, 23, and 25. These 2, I'm going to flag. This one I actually want to pause. I don't want it to run. So I'm going to freeze that thread. I can right-click on it and freeze the thread. It'll say 25, you don't move. Everybody else moved. What I did the previous time was that I let 25 move as well, so it kind of ran away. So now I'm freezing it, and I'm going to run everything else to the end. Run flagged threads to cursor. And now my 25 is still there. So if I go here, I'll see these are the threads that have stopped here. If I go here, I'll see that there's one thread that is actually stopped here. If I go on 25, I'll see 25 is still at p equals 2. Now, I can select everything else except 25 and freeze those. And I can unfreeze my 25. Now I can actually go and step through it. So that way, all the other threads are frozen, and they are frozen where I want them to be. And this thread is the one thread that I actually need to evaluate on. I can continue working on that thread specifically. Last thing I'm going to show you is if I wanted to do this breakpoint in a different way, I could do a filtered breakpoint. And this allows me to, if I already know its thread ID or some properties of the thread, I can go filter by that, say process ID equals thread ID equals or something like that. All right. So I told you about the 10 slides. Those are for your reference, so you can see them when you go back. They're pretty self-explanatory. Each one of them has a blog at the bottom that you can go read. The one cool one that I will tell you just so that you are a master is this one, which is your default trace point message. Remember in those trace points where you can go say, you know, this value equals something, and instead of stopping, it will continue. You can have the default that is written in that dialog box be, you know, I am the best developers ever, or something like that. And if you go to this register key and modify it, it will be the default for that variable. So you can kind of do that and have the ID customized your way and show it to everybody that you're the best in the world. You can also make sounds for breakpoints if you wanted to. It's a good prank to play on other people while they're not looking. It's going to go modify it for them. And that's it for today, and we're actually right on time. I'm not going to summarize everything that I did today. It was a lot of stuff. Just sure to say that debugging is where you spend most of your time in Visual Studio, most likely. I hope that I was able to show you some tips that you didn't know about, that you will go back home, feel great while you're working on it, and be able to very effectively debug your code. That's all. Thank you very much. I'll be here if you want any questions.